This is Katie Ruther speaking with John Banson on May 21st, 2020.
There.
Hi.
Yeah, there we go.
I
need to get my technology figured out there.
Yeah, no worries at all. Is now an okay time?
It is. I just finished up my lunch dinner.
Excellent.
We only eat twice a day, so eat a big breakfast and a late lunch, early dinner. That's all.
Yeah,
that's all.
That makes sense. What time do you usually start evening milking?
Well, chores have already started, but we actually, since we're a little larger farm, we have two employees that actually do, one does the morning, one does the afternoon milking. So they get here about 2 o'clock and start that up.
Mm-hmm.
And cows are coming up the lane right now. I'm watching them as I'm eating my lunch, and then they'll start milking about 3 o'clock.
Uh-huh. Very cool. Well, thank you very much for agreeing to speak with me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem.
From what I've read about you, it seems like you've been at it for quite a while.
Yeah, we've been organic for 20 years now. So, you know, before that, we were quite close to, you know, we were more minded towards that, but not as committed, maybe you might say. So we were still in a conventional mode, which meant you really need to push production in order to keep your business afloat. And the brilliance of the organic model for organic dairy is that you don't need to push your animals so darn hard. You can kind of embrace what a cow is supposed to be, a cow, instead of making them machines like we've tended to make all of agriculture right now.
Yeah. So I was wondering if you could first just introduce yourself and tell me a little bit more about how you got into food and agriculture initially.
Okay. Well, I'm John Banson. My wife and I, Julie, have been farming on our own now for about 30 years. And I suppose to get back to where I was born into agriculture. So my grandfather, actually my grandmother's father as well, my great grandfather was a Jersey dairy farmer. And so was my grandfather and my father, and I am, and I had two brothers that were, and an uncle and a cousin. So it's kind of been in the family. As they say, dairy farming is a disease you have to be born with. So, because you really don't understand it if you're not born into it. You don't know any different if you're born into the whole thing. And so we've been dairy farming ever since. I went to college in Nebraska, a little liberal arts college, and met my wife there, and we got married, moved back out to Oregon. I started working for my father and worked for my mom and dad for about 5.5 years, and then we found our own farm here in Monmouth and started that up. And about 8 years into our farming career down here, we made the transition 9 years. So it's, we're 21 years, I guess, into organic now, and started the transition 22 years ago now to do the organic agriculture, and we've been just kind of pounding at it ever since.
Did it ever cross your mind to do something other than dairy farming after you graduated from college?
Not really, you know. I wasn't so sure I was going to be a dairy farmer either. So there you go. You know, I grew up with it and knew what it was and enjoyed the outdoor aspect didn't realize, you know, that there was other ways to live in this world, and never got spoiled that there were weekends or anything like that. I'd briefly considered doing large animal veterinary. I started as a, you know, kind of my schooling, I was a biology major, kind of looking towards maybe doing a veterinary practice, but it turns out large animal veterinarians have to drive a lot, and I really loathe having to be on the road driving. And so, you know, and then kind of like being a doctor, you're always dealing with not healthy people, and that didn't appeal to me too much. Always picking up, you know, trying to fix injured and dead and sick, and I didn't want to do that. So my dad had a job opening, and I took it and kind of never looked back from there. And it's really served us well. You know, I enjoyed growing up on a farm. It was really a nice way to grow up. I want my kids to grow up on a farm because it's just a different way of lifestyle where, you know, you're home eating all your dinners with your family, and it's just what appealed to me. And the kids got to grow up in a really nice setting. And we still, you know, the way we put the farm together, we kind of had a goal to where we could have some employees. So once the kids were old enough where they were going to be in activities and things, we could get away a little bit if we needed to. And so that's how we did it. And so we worked really, really, really hard for a few years, and then we just worked really hard the rest of the time.
Yeah, I love it. So I'm wondering if you could just describe your operation briefly.
Okay, well, we have now currently where it sits, we milk about 175 Jersey with some cross New Zealand Jersey Friesian crosses in there as well. We are grass milk, so we feed no grain to the cows. You know, our focus has been really always on utilizing high quality pasture that I can grow and manage well, and everything else follows. So we have about 625 acres we either own or rent and manage. About 250 of those are our own acres, and the rest are rented acres. We don't grow any other kind of crops. We grow pasture and pasture and more pasture, and we focus on multi-species stands. So we have, I want every time we have a pasture, once we go to re if we go to replant a pasture, every time we put in even more species. So I've really found over the years that for real ultimate soil health and cow health, the more species of things that you can throw in there, the better. And so we'll have in any of our pastures, we'll have forbs like plantain and chicory, and we'll have clovers. I throw in a little alfalfa now, bird's foot trefoil, you know, as many legumes as I can really throw in there. That's helpful for soil health, but also milk production because it really mixes well with the other things. And we have several different varieties of grasses. Perennial ryegrass is my favorite, but we put in orchard grass in those fields as well. Some brome grass, sometimes some soft leaf fescue if there's one I like. Some festalolium, maybe some meadow fescue. So we put a big old mix together, and that's what we've really focused on, that multi-species, just because that brings in more soil health. Because, you know, every plant has a different relationship with different microbes in the soil, different insects, different everything. So, and if you sit there and you watch cows graze, different cows, you know, however they're feeling that day will graze different things. So they're that way they can find what they want, what makes them feel best. And that's what we focus on.
So how much land is dedicated to grazing and how much to growing hay or forage for the winter?
Okay, so the whole dairy farm here, we have 80 acres that's only for milk cows on this farm. We have a bridge to get them across to another 35 acres on the other side of the river. That's only pastured for the milk cows. We have, let me see, we've got 50, 60 acres totally dedicated only for heifer pasture up at the other farm. And then we have a lot of acres that we'll take a crop off of and then graze. So pretty much all acres will be grazed at some point of those acres. You know, and some of this ground is riparian ground that we have of the 625 acres, and some is in trees. So, for instance, we have it's probably about a 15 or 20 acre patch of densely populated white oak up on our other farm. And it's, you know, the heifers have a field that they graze next to it. They have several fields they can graze next to that oak stand. And in the fall time, as soon as the nuts start to fall, the heifers will go in there and just eat copious amounts of nuts and get nice and shiny and fat. And, you know, you can even see it coming through, the oils coming through in their manure. So, you know, we utilize a lot of stuff here, and so pretty much everywhere the animals will eventually graze. There's probably, let's see, I'm going to do the math. We'll take a couple cuttings on, let me do all the math here. So we got, you doing the math? You can do some math. 40.
Okay.
40 plus 40. So we got, we're up to 80. And then we have another 90. 80 and 90 is 170. So 170, we take feed off of. That's most of it's to take feed off of for winter feeding, but then it will also then turn into grazing ground after that. Wow. And some of the ground we have irrigation rights on. So we're in Oregon, where it's very arid in the summertime, and we'll go 3 months, 3.5 months without any rain, basically. You know, maybe a quarter of an inch in those 3.5 months every year. It's just the way it is.
Wow.
We have a Mediterranean climate here, so you know, we just were fortunate to get an inch of rain here. Well, better than an inch and a half of rain here in those last week, which is really a nice time to have it, because you can pretty much guarantee come June, the spigot gets turned off and then we have to start irrigating. So some of the ground's irrigated and some of the ground's dry land. So the dry land ground, when it's done, it's done. So we'll take a couple cuttings off of that. We'll graze that with our heifers after the second cutting, because it starts to grow back a little bit, but not enough to do full cow grazing. So that's how we kind of manage things around here.
Wow. So what values would you say you initially built your business on, and how would you say they've stayed the same or shifted over the last few decades?
Okay. Well, the values that we started the farm with, I think that was that's an interesting question. So, you know, the values, we saw that there was a real bonus, because I grew up on a grazing dairy. So we grew up knowing I knew I wanted to emulate that, stay in that. But I also knew that I needed needed to get better at it than what I saw growing up and fine-tune the system. So we were really looking to produce a high-quality product and then also stay in business by keeping our costs low and all that. But it became pretty apparent early on because in our I've actually been dairy farming full time out of college for 35 years now. So in that time, we've seen the dairy industry change pretty rapidly to where about a little before I did the transition to organic, so probably about 25 years ago, it became pretty apparent that the marketplace didn't care what kind of milk I produced as long as it was white and they got it on the truck and they could pay me whatever they wanted to. And I didn't want to live in that world. You know, that's what appealed to me. And that's probably the value that I saw in organic was that the consumers saw it as different, better, different. And I wanted to be in that realm. I wanted to be there. I wanted to be where our product was valued as something special, something different, something higher quality, something more nutritious. So that's really what that started that down the line. And, you know, the more we've been involved with it, the more our values have even fine-tuned that. So that's why we switched over to grass milk. We wanted to be, again, another step above and seen as something that consumers were really searching after. You know, being in commodity ag is no joy. It's no joy for the cows, for the employees, for the owners, for anybody. And anybody who says they get joy out of chasing that is probably fibbing to you. Because there is no joy in that. I mean, dairy farming can be challenging at its best days. You know, it's not we're trying to keep all these parts together and keep animals healthy and keep everybody, you know, going the right track and doing all that, and then, you know, keeping equipment going and, you know, doing all sorts of stuff. You know, as COVID-19 shows you, Mother Nature is a pretty stern taskmaster when she wants to be. So, you know, we've really, really wanted to focus on being something different. And that's what this has allowed us to do. You know, we've taken more of an approach as we've gone along to embrace what it really means what we can do in agriculture, because as I tell people, you know, any kind of agriculture has a footprint, you know, every kind of agriculture, anything we do has a footprint. And our job is to reduce the footprint as much as possible. That's our job. And so to that effect, I see things like planting copious amounts of trees on the farms, doing all sorts of things that making sure that there's never a drop of water that leaves my farm that has any sediment in it. You know, I don't want to see any, we lose any soil or foul the water in any way. So that allows us to do that. That's the kind of things that organic ag allows me to do. And I don't have to feel as pushed. You know, we make a really nice living. We've done really well. And we haven't had to push the land, the soil, or the cows, or the employees to their ultimate limit. And that's what I really like about it.
Yeah, that's great. To turn more specifically toward organic now, what would you say the concept of organic means to you, and then farming organically more broadly?
Well, there's a little blurb that Organic Valley has what the definition of organic is, and it's, you know, some blurbish about, and I also thought it was kind of just a blurb kind of stuff, but something about the interconnectedness of all life, and that's really what it's all about is, everything's connected. You break a connection and bad things happen. And so soil health, you gotta work on soil health. That's got to be your number one job. And however, there's different ways to do that, but the biological way is by far and away the way that really shines. And I think that's probably the basis of the whole organic system for us. And so, that's what this multi-species plantings are. That's what cover cropping is. And that's what managing the animals to get them, to intensively rotate cows, that does that. Having tree rows and hedge rows and things like that does that. Now, sometimes you're going to have to repeat the question because I get on a tangent and then it all goes out my brain. So what's the question I'm working on?
Yeah, the concept of organic and what it means to you and farming organically more broadly.
Yeah, I pretty much covered it, I think.
I think so, too. Yeah.
Go ahead.
So when you transitioned to being organic, what was the transition like?
Not smooth, a little spooky. You got to realize in the conventional world, you find out that you read any of these articles, because of course all ag has all their ag publications that you read, and if you didn't use this product or that product or the other product, if you didn't treat your cows with dry treatments, which meant antibiotics in every quarter, a dry off, you were going to fall off the edge of the earth, and you got used to using things like for calves, using a product and that you put in their grain, which is called Rumensin or Decox, which helped fight coccidiosis. And so, you in the conventional world, you get used to that. And in the conventional world, you're pushing your cows a lot harder. And so you get on those crutches. And then when you say, okay, I'm going cold turkey now, it's like, now what? Now what? And the first thing conventional dairy farmers do when they convert is they go and they try and find replacements for all the lotions and potions that they'd been buying conventional. So it's just, it's replacement therapy, right? So, if this is what this antibiotic did, then you get this other thing, this organic treatment, which is not going to be as quickly effective. And you might throw a whole lot at it, but that's your replacement, right? Well, you become, so that first year you're thinking in that mode, and then as things sink in, you realize, well, no, you need to treat things, you need to treat calves like calves and cows like cows. We needed to reduce our grain feeding dramatically, which puts less stress on the cows, gives them more forage because they're not filling their belly with one thing, they're filling with it another. And now all of a sudden your cows are healthier. And then the calves, instead of feeding them Decox and Rumensin, what do? You should not overpack them in pens, and you should keep them really clean, and you should feed them copious amounts of milk because that's what a calf is supposed to do. And so it's just a matter of having the mindset change that it all works. You just got to figure out, you got to figure out how to do it biologically instead of this should be a biological, like that one commercial says, it should be a biological process, not a chemical experiment or not a chemistry experiment. I think that was that Chipotle commercial or something that said that, and that's true. That's what you got. You got to get used to the fact that, this is biology, not chemistry.
Yeah, that's a good point. So it sounds like, over the years, your thinking has evolved a lot and your practices. So what were some of the main sources that you used to learn about organic agriculture and all these new practices that you were bringing into your farm?
A lot of it was observation. So, and that's the feedback loop on a farm. Those who su successfully farm are the ones that use that feedback loop, see what's happening and act accordingly. And I tell that to my son, who's back on the farm now, has been for 8 years now, that observation, observation, and more observation is how you're going to succeed. And so, as I saw something happen, if you keep your eyes open and you do something and you get positive results, do more of that. And if you get negative results, do less of that. So much of what we've done is that, just observation and changing. Now, I also belong to a grazers group, and I belong to a couple, three grazers groups, and I read, publications, and I, check out different people. Like, there's a soil scientist from Christine Jones from Australia, who's just brilliant, and I read that, and then there's an apple orchardist from your neck of the woods, who wrote a book on mycorrhizal fungi, and I read that, and that was just absolutely brilliant, just absolutely mycorrhizal planet. It's one of the most brilliant books I've ever read. Just because it gives you things to think about and what you're doing and how things are interacting. And that's really, reading The Mycorrhizal Planet really got me juiced even more about multi-species. And then Christine Jones pushed that multi-species message even further home. So it's that kind of stuff that I look for. And I don't generally, who would know, who would think that the way to success on a dairy farm is to read a book about mycorrhizal fungi from an apple orchardist. You wouldn't think that would be the way it would go, but that's the way it went. So, you look for information, process it. That's probably what my biology degree did for me. It got me, like I said, I wasn't told what to think in college. I was taught how to think. And the how to think is much more important than what to think.
Yeah, I completely agree. And then in terms of Organic Valley and being a part of the cooperative, what has that been like?
Oh, it's been the best thing I've ever done in my career. Yeah, just hands down. So it, the organic thing appealed to me because it was where I wanted to be as far as where consumers were interfacing with farming. And Organic Valley just provided that mode to be able to do what I was doing and do what I do well, and then let somebody else do the marketing end of things. And it's been just, it's been fulfilling personally just because of the people I've met there. Some of my best friends, and I don't get to see them very often, but some of my best friends in this world are all Organic Valley farmers. I can't say about the farmers around me here in Oregon, because they're conventional farmers. They don't understand it. They don't get it. They're not, anytime you are all pushing towards the same direction, towards the same goals, it with people that are kind of like-minded, it's just a phenomenal thing to be able to do. Organic Valley is not perfect, 'cause for sure, but they're the whole best thing out there for what I'm doing. So, and it's just been filled with really good people, not only the farmers, but the employees are just some brilliant people, and people I like to deal with, and people that are also pulling towards the same thing that we're pulling towards. So, yeah, that's been a really, really fulfilling part of our career. Couldn't imagine my dairy career without it.
Wow. Yeah, that's certainly the impression that I get speaking with Organic Valley farmers and reading the website and getting a better idea of what Organic Valley is all about.
Yeah, sometimes websites might be full of bullshit, but this one's not.
Yes, for sure. So you mentioned that you're surrounded by conventional farmers. What would you say some of the tensions are that exist there?
Most of these are not dairies. Most of these are grass seed, hazelnut, grapes or wine, you name it. The main tension there is they spend their entire career going up and down the road here with a spray buggy, because they're, when you're farming that, excuse me, that conventional mode, it's about what are you going to kill today kind of a deal. It's they see everything as a threat. Everything is something, whether it's insect, bacteria, fungi, whatever, they're all threats. So, it's constantly checking your crops and then pulling out the spray buggy to spray some other death on it to go after something else, whether that's an insect or a disease or whatever. But instead of looking at it through soil health and biodiversity, they look at it through a monocrop system where they have to really work at killing everything else other than that monocrop.
How different do you think it is being an organic dairy farmer as opposed to an organic farmer that's producing other products like fruit or vegetables or meat?
Oh, I think if you embrace the organic system, it doesn't really matter. Vegetables don't have to be milked twice a day. There's that. It's pick your poison in the farming thing, because if you want to be a vegetable grower, everything's condensed really. Season you're it's a lot different mode than what we do. What we have is we have, on the dairy farm, I'm primarily a grower of forages, and then I use my cows to harvest them. But I still have to be, so I've got to be really focused on my forages, on my soils. And then I have to make sure I focus on the cows, not only, what they're eating, but their breeding, genetics, all sorts of stuff. So there's a lot of different moving parts, and it's 24 hours a day, 365. I mean, cows don't stop. You're dealing with a biological being, and you have to make sure you're making sure that you're in keeping them healthy. So there's that too. So you get these added layers, which you don't have in vegetable farming. Vegetable farming is kind of hard physical labor, a lot of the times. It's a lot of as when Organic Valley early days, they were a vegetable cooperative at the first up. They weren't dairy. And they went out looking for more people to grow vegetables for them. And they showed up at a dairy, so they figured dairy farmers, they had little extra ground, they had fertility, and maybe they'd want to do that. And they showed up to the guy, Al Hass, or no, Al's dad, what was his name? Ray Hass. They showed up at Ray Hass's dairy farm and asked him if this is in Wisconsin, would he be willing to, grow some vegetables? He says, no. And the term they used for it there was asses and elbows. He says, I'm not into all asses and elbows, but I'll do dairy. I'll do organic dairy for you. So, and that does kind of speak to what vegetable growing is. It's asses and elbows because you're down in the soil and banging at it, and a lot of back work and a lot of that. So, but if you know your vegetables, and you're committed to organic ag, it'd be about the same thing as knowing dairy and then being committed to organic dairy too. So, I've never really done. I do a huge vegetable garden, but I've never grown vegetables on a commercial scale. So I'll stick with feeding myself and my family.
Yeah, for sure. Could you talk a bit about your decision to go to grass milk?
Well, our focus has always been to reduce grain as much as we could, focus on our forages, focus on our soil. You know, we can grow forage really well here if we do, you know, if we focus and do a good job. And so I knew that was our strength. And when the grass milk opportunity came up, I said, okay, let's do it. Let's make that final switch. We were down to only feeding about 4 pounds of grain a day anyway. So we weren't having to take a lot away. You know, I just knew there was going to be some transitions where we had to reduce our cow numbers a little bit, which we did by 25 cows, and focus a little bit more on our wintertime forages, which we did. So, you know, but, you know, you can no longer feed calves grain, which we're a little concerned because we thought we needed to feed calves grain to make them, get them through that weaning process. But that was BS. All you do is feed them more milk. So then you're fine.
Wow. Would you say that consumers fully appreciate and understand what you're trying to do on your farm?
Some do, some don't. You know, the majority of people still don't buy organic products, but a minority do, and they're the ones that are thinking more and studying more and learning more. And so there's that, you know, there's still plenty of people who show up at McDonald's to eat McDonald's burgers every day.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't think they really get what I'm doing. Nor do, you know, nor do a lot of consumers understand anything about their food. You know, they, you know, just look at the meat end of things. If people have to look at the reality of what that was to raise those conventional chickens and pork and beef in those ugly settings, I don't think they'd probably eat it very much. I can't imagine they would. You know, but I think those who... Some might trick themselves into thinking that all the cows are out frolicking on grass and the pigs are out digging in the soil, and they're not. They're sitting in a, you know, in a big old concrete nastiness and living their whole life on that. So, you know, I think there's a lot of understanding consumers don't do, some on purpose, some just because they don't even ever think about it.
Yeah, absolutely. If you were speaking to consumers who either were turning a blind eye knowingly or just are lacking education, do you think there is anything in particular you would want them to understand about what you're doing or about organic agriculture more broadly?
Yeah, I think... Nothing takes the place of having consumers see exactly what you're doing on your farm. I mean, to see it, to then speak to it, to understand it. There's very little I can say that goes to print that without the backup of them seeing what we do. I mean, I've had a lot of folks here tour our farm over the years through either schools. You know, we have colleges on here. We have the vet class from OSU shows up here. So we have a lot of tours, but, you know, there's been a lot of tours where it's been like grade school kids, even preschool kids at times, and they've shown up and they show up with their parents, right? And then, you know, these are people who are not organically minded, who have never, you know, really done math about it. But once I bring them on the farm, I talk about the soils, I talk about the health of the animals, I talk about what we're doing, I talk about a little bit how that differs from what conventional ag is doing. And then it's light bulb turns on, and so many of those folks have decided that, you know, even though they might not fit the political spectrum of who would consume our products, and they, you know, might not have spent a lot of time thinking about it beforehand, once they see it with their own eyeballs and walk it, it makes all the sense in the world. So, and that's what, you know, I want them to understand, this connection between the soil
and the plant and the cow and them. I want them to understand how this interconnectedness of all life works, and you can't cut the chain and stay healthy. So, you know, I think COVID-19 might focus on people a little bit more on health. I know people that are actually like losing weight because they realized they were getting older and were in the range that would COVID-19 would kill them easily if they got it. So, mm-hmm. you know, I think there's more math being formulated right now as we speak. You also have a lot of pain and agony because 38 million people don't have jobs or income right now. But I think there's a little bit of an awakening there. You know, we'll see how it lasts after we get the all clear and everybody goes back to their ways.
Right, exactly. What would you say are some of the biggest challenges that you've encountered as a result of being organic?
Most of it's just been gray matter challenges, you know, thinking through how to make things function better. You know, things on the dairy farm that are really challenging are probably fly control is one of the big things. And we put in a fly vacuum that we walk the cows through twice a day during the fly season. And we put up copious amounts of swallow boxes everywhere, and we keep everything really clean around here. So, you know, it was mostly gray matter stuff about figuring out how, okay, this is what the problem is, what's the solution, and what's the biological solution. And so that's been probably the biggest challenges.
And what would you say, in your opinion, are some of the biggest challenges to the development of organic agriculture in the U.S. or even across the world?
You know, part of it's support, governmental support. So the government right now supports conventional ag in a big way. And organic doesn't get the same support because, you know, we kind of scare the conventional guys anyway, because, you know, we're looking to eat their market. They're worried about, you know, that's what you got to worry about when you're a conventional guy is losing your market share. And so lots of it's that. I mean, we could turn this broken, horrible agricultural system we have in this country around tomorrow if you had the support of the governmental agencies supporting that instead of supporting the kind of ag that is dependent on sprays and poisons and everything else. And the reason why they are supported is because there's money to be had in sprays and poisons and patented GMO seeds. There's not a lot of money to be made on the backs of organic farmers generally, because we don't use any of those high expensive things that conventional ag uses. And so you have a lot of vested interest, you know, billions and billions of dollars being made selling farmers these things that are destroying our planet as we speak. And that's your problem. So, you know, we could, if the government said, okay, we're not subsidizing any of that, that's not going to get any of the money. Organic agriculture, because that's making our water clean, our people healthier, our planet better, that's what's going to get the money. You'd see a change in a hurry. Because, you know, farming is like the field of dreams. Build it and they will come, right? So, you know, if you set up a system that favored sane agriculture policies and clean soil and clean water, you would have farmers switching over to organic production in a heartbeat, because that's where it would be. You know, that's where the support would be. Without that, I see that as a long road. So now we're completely independent in the organic world on the marketplace, having enough of a premium in the marketplace to do what we're doing.
And I was wondering also if you could speak to some of the changes that you've seen in food and agriculture, and especially the organic food movement in the last few decades.
Well, you know, with any movement where there's money to be made, you know, then you get big players to show up and they try and shortchange things and try and do the minimum and all that. And I get that's happening as well. Big companies get involved in it, and you know, then it changes there as well. You know, that's good news, bad news, because big companies get in, and maybe then there's a constant pressure to dumb it down, right? And there's that constant drumbeat of pressure for that. And so we've seen that kind of a change, more bigger players get into it. In the dairy world, there's been like Aurora and some of these big Texas dairies that have gotten into it, which don't bode well for anything. That's why I really enjoy being part of Organic Valley, and that's what I hang my shingle on, is because by and large, all of our farmers are doing it exactly how we say we're doing it. And as long as consumers stick with us, that's pretty helpful. You know, like anything, there's confusion in the marketplace. And like you're talking about the website, there's other websites. I bet if you went onto Aurora's website, they'd greenwash things really well for you. But, you know, go on their farms and see what the difference is.
Yeah. Would you say that the essence of organic agriculture has been dumbed down some in the last two decades?
In some ways, yes. In some ways, no. So, you know, in the early days of organic, there's a lot of rulemaking going on, kind of on the fly, you know, making it up as you go kind of a deal. Not in a bad way, but because there weren't any standards, and then all of a sudden you're making standards. So in some ways the standards actually got better, but now you'll see, you know, like this this movement to let hydroponics be organic. Nothing could be stupider. I mean, that's just wrong. You know, organic should start in the soil. It should be your basics of everything you do. That's where the basics of all health comes from. And hydroponics should have absolutely nothing to do with it. So I'm a little concerned when you see that. It's still the best game in town for me. Organic Valley's still, you know, the best game around. And Organic Valley constantly looks to differentiate and improve. And that bodes well, too.
Yeah, that's great. And then I just have two more questions, if you have time.
All right, sure.
So I was wondering if you could just speak a little bit to the impact that COVID-19 is having on your farm, and then what you've seen in the food and ag community.
Well, it hasn't impacted us terribly much. Organic dairy, you know, has been a premium product, and that's one of the beefs against it, that it's just for the elite to consume, which what that meant is it was too expensive that restaurants wouldn't use any of our products, because, you know, restaurants are trying to keep their cost of production down. So restaurants weren't using any of our, you know, there are very few restaurants, very few that we use our products. Very few. And we're not into the export market. All of our milk is for domestic consumption. So those two things, and that's what's caused all the grief in conventional ag, is that, you know, well over 50% of their food, their milk either goes into, you know, cheap cheese for Taco Bell and McDonald's, you know, or any of these restaurants, TGIF, you name it, you go out there and things are dosed in cheese-like substance everywhere. And so much of their products have gone to that, and then also export markets, and those two markets have dried up, and which has caused a lot of grief and sorrow in their world. On the organic side, not so much. People have always pretty much just, most of our sales have always been to consumers who consume that in their own homes, and it turns out people are consuming more in their own homes right now. So we have not seen an effect there. You know, personally, you know, it's a little bit of a pain not to, you know, if you have to mask up and glove up every time you go to the grocery store, it makes the personal end of living a little less easy and a little less pleasant. You know, grocery shopping is no longer a pleasant thing. It's become kind of a thing you look away from.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's, you know, my son gave me a haircut instead of going to the same lady who's cut my hair for the last 25 years. So that you got that, but that's about it. That's about the changes on our farm. Other than that, it's been really, you know, we're dairy farmers, and that's what we love about it, is that our job is here. I have my commute to work is 50 yards away from where I put my pants on. And so there you go. We haven't had a big deleterious effect. Now, the conventional world is, and conventional dairy now has been bailed out by the federal government because they're buying copious amounts of dairy products, I'm assuming to hand out to all the people who don't have jobs anymore. But that's just feeding into the bad food movement even more, you know. So That shows where government has their focus.
Yeah, absolutely. So my last question is about the hopes that you have for the future of food production.
My hope, in the utopian world of John Banson, somehow people start getting smarter and realizing that we can't just keep using up our soils and poisoning our soils and poisoning our water and poisoning our air, and that we need to change how we make our food. That would be in my utopian thoughts. I also have some reality in my utopian thoughts, and that therein lies the rub, because I know that the forces that we fight against are Bayer Chemical, who also owns Monsanto, and Dow Chemical, and Pfizer Pharmaceutical, and, you know, all these companies that are making copious amounts of money on a system that's broken and unhealthy. And until somehow we can figure out how to break that hold, we don't change our system. So my hopes would be that there's some awakening between consumers and governmental folks that say, hey, but, you know, in essence, we are the government. The people are the government in essence. And if people are still clogging McDonald's, there's an outfit out here on the West Coast, started in California, it's mostly California. It's called In-N-Out Burger. Have you ever heard of that, Katie?
I have, yes.
In-N-Out Burger's all the rage. It's the best thing. You'll never, way back when my kids were still in high school and they took their annual tennis trip down south to California, I was chaperoned for 3 years, and the thing that everybody was, the buzz was, we have to go to In-N-Out Burger, and it was just horrible food. It was horrible food, by the way. I don't get it. I did not understand any of what was special about this. It was just horrible food. They've since put an In-N-Out burger here in Oregon, in Salem, just outside of Salem. I had to take some pipes to get them repaired yesterday, and I had to drive by that thing, and there was a lineup of 60 or 70 cars waiting to get their In-N-Out burgers, and people standing in the line waiting to get their takeout orders at this In-N-Out burger during a COVID-19
really?
Pandemic.
Wow.
And I thought, now that's just, yeah. So unfortunately, we are the government. They are the government. You know, I'm outnumbered as far as probably people using their brains thinking about how their food's produced. If they're willing to sit there for really lousy, bad food in the line that long.
Yeah.
So therein lies the rub. You know, we need more thinkers and less, you know, when you have a world where, and pardon my, don't relay this on because I might get blackballed by Trumpster if he finds out I've been talking dirt about him. But, you know, if we have 45% of our populace who will vote for that man, we got problems. There ain't no thinking about food on that,
right.
That side of it.
Yeah,
you know, it's
for
just
sure.
About profit and you know, how much your shares are worth of this or that or the other, and whether your 401k is sexy enough for the woman in your life and all that, you know, that kind of talk.
And
that's just not a good thing for our food system.
Yeah.
So your task is to get more people thinking about how you do that.
Exactly, yeah. Just a small task to take on.
But, you know, I don't think it's about being liberal or conservative, because I do have some, you know, things that would not probably fly with the liberal elite either in my thought processes. But I think it's about, you know, being able to process information, see what makes sense, you know, and like this COVID-19, it's, you know, people who are doing the math and who have some idea what biology does and how it reacts. You know, I know there's a lot of people who just want everything opened up right now because they think that, you know, the numbers are dropping. So we've passed this test. No, we haven't. It's biology, folks. Biology will, you know, when COVID-19's done with us, it'll be done with us. Not until.
Right.
We better figure that lesson out. So.
Yeah, exactly. Well, this has been great. Those are all of the questions I have for you. Is there anything you wanted to add that you didn't get to say?
No, I can droll on for hours and hours and hours. You probably don't want me to droll any longer. So.
Okay. Well, this has been really, really great. I so appreciate you taking the time.
Well, keep up the good fight.
Yes, you too. And I will keep in touch.
All right. Sounds good.
All right. Thanks so much, John.
Okay. No problem. Talk
okay.
To you later.
Bye.
Bye-bye.